And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 674. It's Monday. That means we're recapping the week that was in Fab, talking about some disappointing players in May, and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, and my guest tonight, kind of a co-host in a way on the Monday show, you can find his work over at Sports Ethos. He's on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bub, doing great. A little bit later tonight, but that's all right. Still awake, and well, just as good as show as normal.
Yep. I appreciate you moving it back a few hours. We're going to get this done. It wasn't the most like exciting week in Fab, but there'll be some interesting topics to discuss because we were texting about something yesterday. I saw Vlad tweet out a text. I know you didn't win the player we'll talk about later because I saw how much he went for, but there's a couple other big names. It goes back to the story we talk about a lot is make sure you guys check your individual league's waiver wires because you never know who might show up out there, which is pretty interesting, even though this was week 12. Basically, we're like right around the corner from the halfway point of the season, and there's still some interesting drops that are taking place out there. So we'll talk about them. Obviously, as you know, there's a lot more craziness in OCs. So that's why we kind of focus on that and more close to the norm that people play in 10s and 12s. So we'll get you covered there. But before we do that, let's talk about some May disappointments. Last week, we used the fantasy or the Fangraphs player rater and talked about some kind of a little bit of like surprises in May. We're not using the player rater so much here. I just looked at performances for the month of May and looked at more disappointing side of things. And should we be holding on to these players? Do we believe there might be a bounce back? Stuff along those lines. So let's start with the popular name that's out there, and that's Justin Turner of the Toronto Blue Jays. This is a player that, you know, last season had a pretty good season, continues to hit for good average. This year, it's been a dud. In the month of May, Turner hit 111 without a home run, 3 runs scored, 5 RBIs, like nothing. It's pretty bleak when you look at Turner. He's not even playing every day, which is a big bummer as well. So when you look at a guy like Justin Turner, do you believe that there's something there to give you optimism, or are we kind of moving on from this situation?
Well, the first thing with Turner is his age, because he's one of the older players in baseball right now. He's 39 and a half, and it's got to end sometime. And this could very well could be it for Turner. Not to mention that the Blue Jays has always they've had that this issue with hitting last year and a half or so. And Vlad's finally breaking out of it, but the rest of the team's still kind of lagging behind. And so I don't know what's going on in Toronto, but yeah, Turner, he actually had a very great start to the season in April. He had 300 with 3 homers, 11 runs in RBI, OPS close to 900. But yeah, it's just, I mean, he didn't strike out a lot in May. He only had 11 strikeouts and 72 at bats. So it seems like a more of a BABIP issue. But I mean, like I said, he's older. So who knows if the quality of contact's declining. I don't have his page up currently, but
it was less than a 2% barrel in May. He's not, and that's almost a 46% ground ball rate. So not great.
Yes. Yeah. That's not ideal, especially when, I don't know, like, there's some red on his Statcast still, but it's mostly like the whiff percentage, the K percentage, the walk percentage. So his, approach to the plate is still fine. It's just making contact, successfully is an issue. And like when you're 39, it seems likely that this is the end for Turner.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like I have him in a couple spots, 112 and a couple 15s, and I've been looking weekly to drop him in certain teams. There hasn't been good corner infield options, unfortunately, so I'm just kind of like hanging around. As you guys will tell, there'll be a few corner infielders we'll be talking about on tonight's show, so it's been difficult to replace him. Like I think in one league, I don't know if I did it with him or with somebody else, like Wilmer Flores seemed more appetizing right now than Justin Turner. And so then it basically turns into a revolving door of streaming is what you're going to do if you are rostering Turner. He's on the bench pretty much everywhere. I can put him on the bench if I was not able to drop him. But he'd be a drop for me if you can find the replacement. Now, in 15s, that's extremely difficult to do to find a replacement. So it's just one of those that you probably just bench him unless you're – in desperation mode, it seems like.
I will say, though, before we move on, that in June so far, he's 8 for 23 with a 348 average, and he's already matched his May hit total, which is, I don't know, I was looking at some players because to see if I want to add anyone, and there were a lot of players who were highly ranked that had poor stretches. I was looking at the last 30 days, so it's, I don't know, May must have been a bad month for offense. I know like a lot of pitchers really picked it up, and it could have just been a league-wide trend, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. I still think he's Turner's near the end because of the age, but it's interesting to see that he's kind of rebounded so far in June.
Yeah, it's a great point because, yeah, when I was putting this list together, a lot of big times names were having rough Mays. And then I was laughing because, like, I was writing my risers and fallers for Fantasy Pros, and I know at least three of the ones that are on the risers from past week were on the horrible months of May. So it could be just guys, you know, flipping the calendar to a new month and feeling better, or they're playing with an injury. I know Turner was banged up a bit. He's always banged up, it feels like. But I think the biggest thing, like, you know, it's Father Time usually wins, so it's pretty undefeated. So it might just be that time for Justin Turner. Let's talk Jake Berger. And I think this is a lot of injury to do, but we'll see. In the month of May, it's been not ideal for Jake Berger, is the nice way I could put it. I know he went deep just the other day, so that gives some optimism. But when you look at the month of May, Berger at 213 with one total home run, which is not what we're wanting out of Jake Berger. So when you look at his profile, are you still optimistic with what you're seeing, or I think he's just hurt, but there's not much we can do if they keep running him out there.
Berger hurts because he's one of the reasons why my one main event is doing so poorly. I was relying on him for power, and it just hasn't been there. And like you mentioned, the injury, it's, if you're, you can't really blame someone for being hurt. It's just unfortunate that it's happened. And his stat cast is okay. A 10% barrel rate is good, 72nd percentile. But with Berger, you kind of want something at least above 80%, maybe close to 90 with what he did last year. The XBA is low because of the strikeout rate. And nothing good has really happened. Just 146 in April, 213 average in June and May. So far, 250 in June and six games. But I heard the talk about the oblique still kind of being an issue, maybe. And definitely scary, especially on the Marlins, who aren't really playing for anything. And I mean, Berger's 28, so it's not like he's a big piece of their future. I mean, if anything, they probably want him healthy to trade him. But a shutdown is a possibility if he continues to be somewhat hurt, but it's not what I paid for in my drafts this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't get as many shares as I thought I would have with Berger, just because a lot of people are getting excited about him as the draft season came to an end. But it's definitely disappointing because, like, he tweaked his side like last week and they didn't even, like, he maybe missed a game. So it's just one of those that I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy about. Again, I would drop Turner before you drop Berger, but to each their own. And that one, at least Turner's showing signs of life, which is a plus. Mike Kerwin from work says, salutations, gentlemen, as he's working right now. So he's sitting around, sitting by an ambulance, probably waiting to get a call and checking in on us. So appreciate it, Kerwin. Joe Adell. There was a time on the show, Ben, where it was like, man, people spent so much money on Joe Adell. And here we are. Like, he was awesome in April. No denying that. Was at that point seemed very worthy. Like, he made so many adjustments that seemed pretty legit to make things happen. Well, the month of May was not as kind to Joe Adell, where he hit 144 with a 33% K rate. Remember, their K rate dropped in April. He did hit 7 home runs and drive in 16 and stole 3 bags. That's a promising situation. And when you look at the quality of contact with Joe Adell, still a 15% barrel rate, only a 37% R hit rate. So there might be some positives in the Joe Adell lining. At the same time, there's some massive drops right now, though. So what do you see when you look at Joe Adell? Because if there is a position that we can make moves with on the waiver wire, outfield seems to be one from week to week.
Yeah, we'll touch on him again during our ads and drops, but I dropped Joe Adell in my 12 teamer at least a week ago. It's just, this is why he struggled to start his career out. He's just, this, the K rate is just crippling his production. And like you mentioned, the K rate in May, but it came with a 603 OPS despite the 7 home runs and the 16 RBI. I mean, from a real life perspective, he's killing the Angels right now. And I mean, well, the average is killing your fantasy team as well. And you can't forget about average. It's so hard to keep that, in a good place. But so if you want to talk about bat cast, he's 99th percentile in bat speed. Adell's on the year. So I think it would probably do him some good to kind of turn that down a notch, because his K rate is almost 30% for the year, 30% as well. So it's been a year long issue striking out, even though he had that great start in April. And I mean, the Angels have nothing to lose with playing him right now, because they're not going anywhere again this year, unfortunately. But he's got to fix something to be a productive major leaguer going forward. I mean, he could end up being someone like Joey Gallo or Adam Dunn, where they just have awful averages. But at least those guys walked. I don't think Adell really walks that much. No, he has a 26th percentile walk rate. So, yeah, he's just a free swinger that's, if he connects, it goes a long way. And he's fast, so he's one of those toolsy guys. But it's for fantasy, it's not really good right now. And if you want to drop in a 12, I don't see an issue. And I think he was dropped in some 15s as well this week in the main event. So it's people are starting to – they're kind of fed up now.
Yep, I completely agree on the drop in 12s for sure, because he would be a drop for me if I had the need to replace him. It just goes back to why we talk about the money spent, especially in 12s, and why it's so hard for me. Like, it's probably like 25% of the time it feels like it works out. 75%, you're regretting it at some point in the season. And that might vary, obviously. I'm just kind of throwing numbers out there. But that's why we have a lot of the discussions we have. Like, yeah, I like the move. And we'll talk about it with Elliot Ramos later, because with my three OCs, it was the wide gamut of winning bids. I won him in one. Let's just say I had the lowest number. So, it'll be the perfect example on where I stand on these type of players. And people know I love Elliot Ramos. I am a big fan, but I was not spending triple digits on Elliot Ramos. Mike from Mike Virginia in the chat says, Bubba Ben, love the show, guys. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Mike. We'll get to your question towards the end of the show on Drew Thorpe. Don't you worry about that. All right. This is a fun one to me because I've kind of noticed it over the last couple weeks. And this is Spencer Steer. And I didn't notice just how bad it's been until I started digging into his page. And in the month of May, Steer hit 176 with three homers, four steals, and 14 RBIs. So, like, three homers, four steals, 14 ribbies, 10 runs. Like, you could live with that. You'd hope for a little more playing in that ballpark. But the 176 average was dreadful. He still hits in the middle of the order. He plays first base, outfield primarily. CES is still a ways away. So that's promising for Steer, I think, for playing time. You do have Noelvi coming back soon. So maybe they'll mix things up some more there in Cincinnati. But if you're rostering a guy like Spencer Steer, what are you doing with this? Is it just a bench and you wait and see? Are you what are your thoughts on Spencer Steer? Because it's been pretty bleak.
So he's someone that's kind of turned it on in June as well. So in nine games, Steer is 13 for 38 with a 342 average, and he's at 860 OPS. Beautiful. So maybe it's a thing where May was just a down month for hitting, and now June's turned to June, and everyone's whatever reason they're producing. But yeah, so I was actually I was thinking about trading for Steer in my home league, and I remember seeing how bad he was doing, and I became disinterested pretty quickly. But with him, the red situation is saving him with his playing time, because he's like their veteran, essentially, it feels like right now in the lineup after being this only his second year. But if everyone was healthy, I could see him losing playing time, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. So I think his role is safe in the lineup. But now seeing how he's turned around in June, I think there's maybe you keep playing Steer and see what happens. His Statcast page isn't terrible. I think it's better than when I remember looking at it back earlier in the season. A lot of blue, or like mediocre in the XBA categories, X-Slug, barrel rates, only 6%. And that was a concern for me going into this year, if not really confident in the power being like a reliable tool for him. But he's faster than I thought he was going to be. 74 percentile sprint speed, turned into 11 steals already. He hit 15 all of last year. So I think with the way the Reds are running, he'll be valuable there. So if you need steals, I'd leave him in. And of course, the eligibility everywhere is always valuable with Steer. But I would probably hold tight. I'd be more willing to drop Turner. I feel like Steer's kind of in the same boat as Berger, where, I mean, they were kind of drafted in the same range too. So it helps me evaluate with the relative value of people, especially when they're struggling. But I think Steer, especially playing in Cincinnati, I mean, if you want to sit him in a tough road matchup, I get that. But for now, I'd probably just at least keep playing him when he's home.
Yeah, Steer hasn't been on my drop list yet. He's been on my bench list. That has definitely been a thing with Spencer Steer. But it's the old adage, and maybe it's foolish on my part, but it's kind of like the old Colorado days. There's certain players you just hang on to knowing that they get half their games in Cincinnati, and a lot of the pitching, to be fair, in the Central is not ideal either. So, Skeens and Jones changed that narrative a bit. But as a whole, it's usually a pretty rough road. So you'd hope things would get clicking. And that whole Reds team really struggled in May. So it goes back to your initial argument there about the month of May. Even LA started hitting a little bit this past few days. Maybe it'll start clicking together and Steer will get going. But the steals alone, like you said, could be pretty promising. Like I mentioned, he had three homers, four steals, 10 runs, 14 RBIs. That's nothing like crazy, like still pretty good for a month where he's playing intermittently. So I think that's a pretty strong as well.
Just been the average with these guys, it seems like.
Yeah, and that just seems to be a trend over baseball. It's like I'm the sicko that every evening before I go to bed, I look at like my live stats from the day for each team. There'll be days and you're just like, okay, wow, I got like four home runs or I got this or that, but my guys hit like .183. And it's like, what's going on here? It's so weird. Like this last week, I had a couple days where I think I hit over 300 out of all my teams. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. So this is what it's supposed to look like. But more often than not, it just seems batting average is set a complete sink these days. And I'm trying not to get weighed down by that because it seems to be a universal thing, at least in the grand scheme of things. Well, this one might hit home to both of us because I rostered many shares of Anthony Rizzo, and you are a Yankees fan. But Anthony Rizzo has not been good. I thought it was a concussion thing last year. I thought he'd get better. He had like a stretch, like a two-week stretch that looked pretty promising. But the month of May, that's called a four-week stretch. He went .240 with two home runs, 13 runs, 10 RBIs. Still only struck out 13%, which is great. He's sitting out tonight, Monday night, for the second straight game, saying he's working on things and he feels like he's close. So take the player's word, of course, at all times. But you watch a lot of Yankees. So what are we seeing with Rizzo? Because as a whole, that Yankees team's just been a juggernaut, especially in the month of May, probably the best offense in all of baseball. And Rizzo was one of the few not doing anything in that lineup. And I didn't see a whole lot of signs of promise, but maybe you did.
So his early start kind of masked how bad he's been lately for me, because I have Rizzo in a DC, and I find sad on this week because Spencer Horwitz got called up and I had a replacement finally at first base. So hopefully that's the right call, but just he's actually been worse than June Rizzo. He's been 1-for-29. That's what led to him getting benched last two games, which I think was a smart move. But at least he had .240 in May compared to the other guys hitting in like 140.
It's true. It's true.
But and so I don't know. Like it's not like a strikeout issue because he only struck out three times so far in June and 14 in May. But on a Statcast, it's just ice cold everywhere. And he's not as old as Turner Rizzo, but Rizzo's only 34. But I thought he was past the concussion stuff with the way his April was. I thought he was going to be I thought he'd kind of be what we were hoping for last year when we were taking him as a sleeper and how he started out the year till he got the injury. But like all the expected stats are no higher than 23rd percentile year to date. So it's except for the K rate and the whiff rate. So like I think he's making almost maybe like too much of an effort to make contact. Maybe he's not just trusting himself, but he's always been a high contact hitter. It's just, there's just no pop that goes with it right now. And, I think in 12s, he's definitely a drop. Like I said, I sat on my DC, which is a 15 teamer. So only because I've finally been able to with the replacement, but yeah, I don't think you're missing out much if you drop Arizona 12 right now.
Yep. He's on my drop list. I was unsuccessful this past week because there's not a lot of options at first base. It's very, very bad. I'm sitting there. It's like, it's almost like the adage, can my catcher two just be hurt? So I don't take the pain he brings. But at least he's hitting .240, like you said. So that's kind of a promise. But it's been so bad. So I benched him everywhere, even in DCs, whatever I have. And if I can find a replacement, I am trying to find a replacement, let's put it that way. So if you listen to the show and I am in one of your leagues and there's a first baseman available, might be the first time you see me spend stupid money. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Times are getting a little stressful in my world because I have two teams that are playing pretty well. So like I don't want to have Rizzo be the reason that thing goes the wrong direction. That's for sure. Andy Páez, this is a fun one. And to me, this is a story of a young ball player that comes to the bigs, hits very well. Then the pitchers adjust. Now he's having to adjust back. In the month of May, that was the adjustment part where the pitchers adjusted to Andy Páez, it feels like. He hit .214, three homers, 11 runs, nine RBIs, a stolen base, struck out 36% of the time, which has kind of been an issue all along with Páez is the strikeout thing. But still had almost a 10% barrel and a 42% hard hit rate, which is not bad. And it felt like he's starting to come back, maybe even in June. He's like, got a couple home runs, but he's got some offers. Like looks like there's signs to me, at least. I could be totally wrong. What are you seeing with Andy Páez? Because I mentioned there's plenty of outfield options on the waiver wire, especially in 12s. But for me, it feels like he's still close. They keep playing him every day. I can't move on from him just yet.
No, and just like a couple of the other guys we've mentioned, Páez has done really well in June, 9-for-25, .360 average. So he's turning it on right now as well. And looking, and I know you know this, but Baseball Savant has the 50. Yeah, you can adjust the time frame, I think, but the rolling ex-woba graph, and he is gone from 200 up to almost 400.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, over the last 50 play appearances. So he's definitely seeing the ball better. Maybe he made that adjustment you're alluding to. He has some very good Statcast year-to-date sliders, and he has some very poor ones, but he's a rookie, so it's going to happen. And playing on the Dodgers is so valuable, especially if he's going to be playing mostly all the time. Being a right-handed hitter, he's not really in a platoon threat. So, yeah, I the K-rate is what kind of kept me back from in adding him in Fab when he got called up. But if he can keep the K-rate down pies, I think he'll be very productive going forward. It's just the lineup slot's going to hurt him a little bit because he's going to hit at the bottom. But it's kind of like with the Braves lineup. We've said about in the past, they're going to turn it over so many times, the Dodgers will. So could still have value there, but just and also, too, with the outfield, how rich it is compared to other positions. I mean, don't get tied to him if he goes through a slump. I mean, might be able to drop him, but he has that prospect name and the Dodgers tied to him, too. So he might not be cheap if you try to add him back.
That's the thing. Like, I'd rather bench him and try to figure it out from there. It's got a lot of like that James Outman feel from last year where he crushed it, struggled, and finished strong. Like, it's just what good prospects do that get the chance to do it at the big league level. Not all do. Some just get dropped back to AAA, and you have to wait and see. But I'm with you on Pajes, and I think there's a lot to like there going forward. It's going to warm up in L.A. That team's going to continue to crush baseballs. It's going to get fun for him, I have a feeling. Let's get a couple more hitters, and we'll talk some pitchers here. Nathaniel Lowe, this is a fun one because this hits close to home. I spent some money on him when he got activated from the IL, and it's been interesting. Still hitting 240 in May, so he's got the Rizzo thing going. Home run, 9 runs scored, 15 RBIs, a steal. He's still walking a ton. The problem with Lowe is he's starting to get platooned a bit, and that is frustrating in the fantasy landscape of things. So what are you seeing with Daniel Lowe? Like, I'm not dropping him again back to the whole annoying narrative, first base is hard to find, but the platooning thing does not make me feel warm and fuzzy.
No, and the main reason I added Lowe to the list was because of the lack of power. One home run in April, one home run in May. He's not really been a power guy, but he did have that, I think in 2022, he kind of broke out with 27 homers in 2022. Definitely the outlier of his career so far, but you're hoping for more than two so far into June. And the platoon is kind of unfortunate because he always seemed like someone who was kind of platoon safe. He was always a good real life hitter. But for whatever reason, year to date, versus lefties on the year, he low as a 687 OPS, 275 average. So, I mean, it's not much lower than his versus righties. He's 735 OPS versus righties in the year. But I don't know. The Rangers have kind of been hurt by injuries and poor performances with the young guys. So maybe they're trying to optimize the lineup as best they can. Adelise has been struggling a lot. Yeah, but like with the other guys too, so far in June, Lowe's batting 316 with an 803 OPS, just like he did in April. So the average is kind of back, just that there's no pop. And I don't know, he scored 20, well, like not even scoring runs. He had 6 runs in April, 9 in May, now 4 in June. It's pretty bad so far, and only 19 RBIs in the year. But he wasn't hurt in April, so you can't really blame him too much. But, it's just kind of one of those late-round first basemen that people like that's kind of not really returning value.
Yeah, like the reason I was excited to pick him up is I was like, okay, he'll hit for average. He's in a good offense, so like the run-producing numbers between runs scored and RBIs should be decent. I was hoping for a little more power, but I wasn't looking for the grand scheme of things to solve the puzzles. But yeah, it's been a little disappointing. But again, I drop Rizzo before I drop Lowe, and that just kind of tells you where things are in this world we're living in these days. I'm not going to do a lot of setup on this one because I think this one you can run with as you're pretty well used to Cedric Mullins right now. But the month of May, he hit 136 with 0 home runs, 5 runs, 5 RBIs, and 5 stolen bases with a 32% strikeout rate. I'm going to give you the floor on this one. What's your thoughts on Cedric Mullins?
It looked so good in April when he had 15 runs, 5 homers, 13 RBIs, 6 steals, and hit .224, which wasn't ideal, but the other 4 categories were great. I'm like, okay, this is a good bounce back by myself. And now he's a headache where I consider dropping him. I had dropped a bid list where he was my drop and I took him away because he played all 3 games this past weekend. He was losing playing time to Cowser, then Hayes. It's definitely been a headache rostering Mullins, and it's it's on my team where I have him on my team where I need average help, and he's been an average drain the last couple of seasons. And I don't see anything really getting better with Mullins, unfortunately. It's just, like you said, you saw one of his at-bats earlier tonight, and like he just looks off balance, and like his XBA is 196 on the year. It's just so bad. His X-Slug, so his X-WOBA, XBA, X-Slug are first, third, and second percentile, respectively, this year. It's, I don't know, like his defense is keeping him in the lineup in Baltimore. I just hope that this is not one of those guys where you see something in the underlying numbers. You just hope that it clicks, because he has shown before that he's a capable, like at least average hitter with speed and some pop. Like the wall in right field in Baltimore is perfectly fine for him. It's kind of short, but he just can't. It's just awful. Like, I don't know, especially in 12s, I get dropping him. I was on the cusp in 15s. It's just that it was, I don't know. Like I said, he played the three games over the weekend. He went 2-for-4 on Sunday. It's just, it's been a rough time, and he's hit 111 so far in June. So it hasn't gotten better yet. But
no, it has not. As Cheesecake Art says in the chat here, he's also bashed a teammate in the cranium. So Mullins has that going for him. Hopefully Mateo's back here Tuesday or Wednesday is the hope on that one. All right, let's head to the mound here for some fun names. And I'm going to ask you, because my co-host on my other show would tell me I'm crazy to shut up, Bubba. So I'll let you at least tell me that if I'm wrong. But Aaron Civale, in the month of May, he made 6 starts, allowed 19 earned runs and 30 innings pitched. That primarily came from 7 runs against the Mets, 26 strikeouts, but he had a 5.7 ERA and a 4.3 xFIP. And one of the stats I love to use, and many of us do, 13.2% K to walk doesn't make me get all excited for somebody. But what's your thoughts on Aaron Civale? Because in 15s, I understand the argument. Okay, depth of pitching, sure. In 12s, I could be told to drop him, and I would not argue with somebody. So what's your thoughts on Aaron Civale?
I was surprised you brought him back up, because I thought you were done with Civale after
talking. Oh, I am. I want to let the listeners know that he's still out there.
He shouldn't be, because in April, he had a 5.88 ERA and a 1.42 whip, and I think he said his numbers in May were just as bad, slightly better, like by point percentages. And June, his June start has been rough, 7.2 ERA in the 5 innings. It was 4 runs, 8 base runners over 5 innings. And he had 8 Ks, though, Civale did. But year-to-date, so the biggest thing that's been an issue for him is the low left on base percentage, 67.3%. And his ground ball rate is 31.5%. So that means his fly ball rate's got to be astronomical. Where is it? It's 41%. So, well, it's a lot of line drives, though. So a lot of hard contact, it seems like. And yeah, his Savali's year-to-date ERA estimators are all poor. I dropped him a while ago. I think he should still get dropped. There's just too many pitchers that have emerged that, especially in 12-team leagues, that are much more useful than Savali. Like, he was intriguing when he first got to the Rays. But now that it's like we're almost 2.5 months into the season now, there's something wrong where he's got to fix something, and you can't really afford to have him be on your roster while he's struggling.
Yeah, that shine that he got when he was traded to the Rays has worn off, as some would say. So time to move on in 12s. At worst, even if you had him on your bench, that allows you to stash somebody else or something. Like, that's a position you could utilize with the Civale spot you have there. Now, here's a fun one, because this guy's got worse numbers than Civale, but I think we're all using the, well, Jordan Montgomery didn't have spring training, let's be patient technique. I don't disagree with that, but there's also concerns here. So Montgomery made 6 starts in the month of May. He gave up 14 runs in 2 of the 6 starts. He got 25 runs total in 31 and a third innings pitch. So worse than Civale. 21 Ks with 14 walks. That ain't going to cut it. 7.18 ERA with a 4.63 xFIP. Don't even need to look at his K to walk when he had 14 walks and 21 strikeouts. That's just horrific. So what's your thoughts on Jordan Montgomery? Because this is a guy that for the last few years has been just a linchpin that you never took out of your rotation in fantasy. And now he misses spring training, signs late with the D-backs, and has been a shell of himself. So how are you approaching him?
Well, I started him this week in my 2 TCs because of, I think it was the Angels and like the White and Tigers. Yeah. It was a really good matchup. I'm like, he's got to figure it out now. But also it's a DC, so I'm kind of, he's one of my better pitchers.
You're at the mercy of who's healthy.
Yeah, it's not fun, but it looked promising in April. He had a 2.77 ERA and a 0.92 whip in his 2 starts, but low K rate as well. And looking at his year-to-date numbers, which is most of the season, which is mostly the May, only a 10% swing strike rate, which is actually one of the lowest of his career. And it wasn't really that high to begin with. So that's not good for Montgomery. His K rate is unlucky. So it's 13.8%. It should be more close to like 20 because the rule of thumb is like you double the swing strike rate. So he hasn't really gotten the results that he kind of deserves strikeout wise. The walk rate's also elevated, 8.6%. I think it's still ironing out the kinks from spring training, but like you did say though, it's like we're getting to the point that, so it's kind of like this is his May right now, essentially. So you understand having a poor rough month to the season to start, but he's got to fix it right now. And it's tough. Like, I like Montgomery going into the year because of where he was going, especially in DC. It's like a solid SP3 if you waited to attack pitching heavy, because if you wanted like a closer or a catcher early because of the format. I did that a couple DCs and as my SP3, and they've been able to survive because of some later picks and also the way pitchers have stepped up. But it's, I'm glad I stopped drafting Montgomery once he didn't sign, because I don't know. It's always risky when you have someone like, look at Snell too. It's you never know what's going to happen when these guys don't get prepared. That's why they're spring training. And I don't know. Hopefully, I don't know if their game is tonight or if it's tomorrow where he pitches, but hopefully this is the week that he turns it around. I don't know. There's not much to say here. He's got to get better.
Yeah, he's got to get better. I'm with you. Like, I can't drop him yet. I'd be willing to sit him, or like in your case, I understand starting him. Art in the chat says he sat Monty. I understand both sides of the fence there. I get it. It's been rough. It's like the walks is my big concern. Like, he's not even showing you things of controlling the situation when all things come down to it. But I'm like you said, it's like it's a month late. If people aren't dropping Blake Snell yet, you can't drop Jordan Montgomery. That's the way I look at it. I think Snell in the grand scheme is a better pitcher than Montgomery, but still same kind of basis to the conversation there. Snell's been injured also, which does not help the cause. But you guys know what I mean on that one. It's just a tough spot to be in. Cutter Crawford's a fun one because he's been a lock and load. You put him out there, he's been absolutely amazing. So when I saw him on the bottom part of this pitching list, I was like, wow, this is interesting. So then I pulled it up. In the month of May, Crawford made 6 starts for the Red Sox, allowed 20 runs in 35 innings for a 5.14 ERA with a 4.53 xFIP. He had 32 Ks in those 35 innings. He allowed 11 of those 20 runs in his last 2 starts. So maybe that's a grain of salt situation, or maybe it's just gotten worse in June. That's a whole other discussion. But Crawford still had a 14.2% K to walk. Not great, but not as bad as we've seen with some of these others. What I get worried about, like my Giants with Keaton Wynn, Kyle Harrison to an extent, Jordan Hicks, and then you look at like Houck still doing good, but Crawford, some of these guys with innings pitch concerns, we're getting to the midway point. And this is where I'm going to start getting worried about, are they wearing down? Are they doing this, that, or the other? What are your thoughts when you look at a guy like Cutter Crawford here? Because the old adage was you throw him until he can't throw anymore, and then you move on and replace him. But I don't know if we're getting there sooner than later.
Yeah, so with Cutter, he doesn't really – so unlike Montgomery, Crawford has the better skills. So his whip is a little high. I mean, at least in the 2 months, it was 121, 126 in April and May. Year-to-date, it's only 1.18, which is still fine. But, like, the K and walk numbers are pretty close to how he did in April and May. I think they just kind of evened out with the 1.65 ERA in April, and then out of 5 in May. It's just like that regression where he pitched over his head. And then he got unlucky in May because the walk rate didn't jump up, the K rate didn't decline. He had 5 homers in May though, compared to 0 in April. So that's kind of so like 2.5 per month, which is reasonable for any pitcher. That's like 12, 15 on the season, which is awesome. That's a very low rate. So I have Cutter. Well, I don't have him as many teams as I wanted to because everyone else was so high on him, and year to date. So the one thing with Cutter's profile that was always scary was the fly ball rate. He's a very heavy fly ball pitcher. His ground ball rate on the season is only 36%, and that's shown in his xFIP. So his FIP is 3.42, xFIP 4.17, and that kind of ties in with the 5 homers in May. So he should have, with the way he allows contact, he should have several more homers in April. Hopefully it doesn't stay at like 5, because that would be kind of like Lucas Giolito levels, which isn't good. We all saw what happened to him when he had those homer issues. But I'm still confident Cutter can figure it out. Like, he hasn't had a full year as a starter, but he pitched a lot as a starter last year. His swing strike rate is down from last year. It's only 11.4% compared to 12 and a, 0.5% in 2023. That was time split as a reliever and a closer and a starter. But I mean, the Red Sox need him right now. I don't know who they're going to have to replace Crawford.
That's a big problem. Yeah.
Yeah, like they have Cooper Criswell as in the rotation, and he's starting to get roughed up.
Yeah.
So, and like Giolito's done for the year. Like they had the one extra guy when Giolito was healthy, and but now it's, I think someone else got hurt too. But yeah, I'm fine with Cutter going forward. It's just be mindful of the homers. If they're an issue, then you might have to cut them. But I think he still has potential going forward.
Yep, I'm with you. Like, you hang on to this one. It was a couple of bad starts in a row. Hopefully, he turns the corner, and that'll happen throughout the season for almost any pitcher. They'll have a bump in the road here and there. So, hopefully, it's good things. But I agree, it's kind of, there are some signs of where it might be starting to wear down for Crawford, and that's why at least be on notice if you're rostering him. It might not be the auto start it once was, is what I'm trying to get at on that one. Charlie Morton, you know, we talked about Justin Turner finding father time. Charlie Morton might be getting there too. And we kind of hinted at it all draft season. Like, he's a guy that's going to get you strikeouts. He's going to get you, he'll allow three or four runs, a lot of starts. Going to get you five to six innings most nights. That's just who he is. It's been a little more of a roller coaster of late. He had five May starts, Charlie Morton did. He allowed 15 runs in 26 and two-thirds innings with 31 Ks, though, 12 walks. 5.06 ERA, 3.67 xFIP. Eight of those 15 runs came in his final starts. So he had seven runs in his other four, which is promising. So when you look at Charlie Morton, what stands out to you when you're trying to break things down for him?
The big thing that caught my eye was his whip. So year-to-date, it's 1.3, which is a dagger to staffs, especially like someone like him. Like, you're rolling him out there for Ks, and he's silently just elevating that whip without you really realizing it. But it's all been in May. So his April, he had a 113 whip, Morton did, and then in June so far it's been 1.18. So maybe May's just the outlier. The same number of walks essentially as he did in April, just more hits and fewer innings pitched. Doubled his homer rate, 4 versus 2 in May and April. But yeah, I don't know. Like, you brought up the father time, father time thing, and that kept me away from Morton in drafts. I don't have him anywhere. I've been waiting for like him to just to fall apart. I mean, he's done an excellent job keeping his career going as long as he has. But the whip was always has always been an issue. It was 1.43 last year, and even in his pretty solid 2022, his ratios weren't good. He had 205 strikeouts, but he had a 4.3 ERA and a 1.23 WHIP. So those are below fantasy average numbers. But yeah, I don't know. I know Chris Towers is, he also, I mentioned Chris a few times. I listen to them every day, but he's been talking about how he thinks Morton's a drop in 12s. I don't have that decision to make, but I see where he's coming from, especially with the way the whip is and how other pitchers are performing, kind of like some of the other guys we talked about earlier.
Yeah, it's a great point, because sometimes we see, okay, strikeouts are still good. ERA is not horrible, especially with the indicators. That whip will kill you. That will ruin things for you. So especially as annoying as it is, because pitching actually was pretty good last month. So a guy like Morton's 1.3 whip stands out even more on the grand scheme of things. So I'm with you. That's a tough one, especially as the season goes on. It's obviously much harder to fix those issues. So you want to jump on that now instead of later on that one. The last name we have here that you added to the list, and I'm really glad you did, is Brian Bello. This is a guy I love. I really do. And I'm 100% wrong so far on Brian Bello, because what I see on the field is not the guy that it appeared we were going to get, is the best way I could shape that comment. He made four starts in May, allowed 13 runs in 20 and two-thirds innings, 18 Ks and 8 strikeouts. Did have a 3.95 xFIP to go with his 5.66 ERA, which is good, but really no strikeouts. 20% carry is not horrible, but it's just not there. It feels like with Brian Bello, unless maybe there's something good to point at, but it seems like he's just an average fourth or fifth real life pitcher, and that doesn't help a lot in fantasy.
No, so he's, to talk about Ryan's favorite like term, the Gene Segura Award. I've been playing Bello in the DC that we're in together pretty much every week, and I looked at his year date numbers, like, why am I playing him every week? A, it's a DC, so like we've said, there's not always better options, but I think I sat Bello this week finally. I had enough starters where I could sit him, and yeah, so he had 18 Ks in 20 innings in May. I think that was he was injured in between, right? Between April and May.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, so the innings totals are low. They're about 20 in each. he pitched fine in April, a sub three ERA and a whip just above one, which is what like you and many others were hoping for. But now in June, six walks and 11 innings, only seven strikeouts. He's struggling to find whatever it is that he's missing right now, I think. And like we've been saying with these others, unlike Montgomery, who has a little more like established upside than Bayo. I mean, Morton's been there, done that, but he's probably declining. Bayo is more of like a hopeful optimism, where that's why we were taking him where we were in drafts. But the underlying numbers year to date haven't improved on what they were last year. All the estimators are almost above four, except for the XFIP. The one thing that still helps Bayo out is his high ground ball rate, 55% so far this year. But that can turn into ground balls. The Red Sox, I don't think, have the best defense in the infield. They've been hit by injuries. But I mean, in a 12, I could definitely see myself dropping Bayo if I had him. I may have even drafted him in my 12. I forget. But he's not on my team right now, that's for sure. And he's actually a free agent in my league, if that helps listeners out. And it's a Yahoo 12 teamer, 300 players rostered, so smaller than an OC. I mean, if he picks a backup Bayo, I'd be in to add him. But for now, I don't think he's worth holding on to.
I've seen Bayo in the occasional OC waiver wire streets, so it's happening. It's funny because as much as I poop on Savali, Bayo's pretty much the same dude. So it's like they're very much the Spider-Man gif at times, and that just goes to a nice book note on the pitching conversation here. They can both probably hang out on the waiver wire together as well in most 12s in a shallower format, that's for sure. So, yeah, that's a fun little exercise just because these are guys that, like you said, it's the Gene Segura of our teams, where we're just – you know, you think you drafted these guys, you can trust these guys. Should we be trusting them is the big question. A lot of us like to talk about the hot new thing and like, should we trust that the hot streak's going to be there? Well, let's look at the guys that are holding us down right now, because those are the guys you might have to drop for the hot guy. That's the conversation to be had. So let's speak about some of those ad drops. Let's head to the OC Week 12 Fab recap. And there are some fun names here, to say the least. It was weird, though, Ben, before we start, I just want to ask you, because I did my 12s and my 15s. It was kind of universal for me. It wasn't a massive fab week for me. Like, there was a lot of names when I was doing my weekly write-up. I'm like, okay, there's some guys I'm interested in, but I only had like a drop or two in a lot of leagues. I didn't really have a ton going on. Did you see yourself being super active this week?
No, I think I was less active than I had been, and that was already pretty not active at all. And so I actually have this for reference for listeners. I have Waxman's Fab Summary Report. And so this past week at the NFBC main event, I know we usually do OCs, but this is another good reference point. So in 2024, this year, week 12, the average team spent $28, just below $28. In 2022, that was just below $40. And last year, it was $65. So things are way down. And year to date, the average team has spent $562 in the main event so far. 2022, $647, and 2023, $750 almost. So it's $200 fewer dollars have been spent per team so far in the main event. And
interesting.
I am definitely part of that trend. I mean, I spent early. I have less money available than the average team does, but I definitely slowed down myself lately just because of I want to be flexible going forward. I don't want to be pigeonholed. I was willing to go down to $60 in the Garrett Crochet League, but I didn't get him, luckily, I guess, or however you want to look at it. But I was willing to make that sacrifice there. But yeah, I'm being cautious with my spending right now.
Yeah, I'm with you too, because I spent early, but now I'm kind of just hanging out, making my small bids. Like, we'll talk about my recaps, and I still have a good $400 to $600 in most leagues, which is a lot more than a lot of teams right now, and it leaves me with the opportunity to start overspending pretty soon if I need to get guys and lock up certain parts of my team, that's for sure. So let's start with one, and again, I'll recap the prices in my three leagues for this player later when we do ad drops, but let's talk with Elliot Ramos, one of the most popular names in fantasy right now. Elliot was picked up in 163 leagues, as high as 411, as low as $2. Ramos had a monster week this last week. Yeah, I was like four home runs, I believe, three or four home runs. He's hit first or second. He hit second tonight, just struck out, actually. He walked over 21% last week. That was the big thing for me. This young kid showing plate discipline, but then he also had like a 23% barrel, like a 70% hard hit rate. Not sustainable, folks. But he's a very good ball player, but he's also a guy that's gonna have his ups and downs. But the glove should keep him in the lineup. So I was 100% on board with everybody trying to add him, but I even mentioned, like, don't go bonkers, people, because he's a good ball player, but he's just probably another, like, outfielder three or four in most formats, and things are said and done, in my opinion. So what's your thoughts on Elliot Ramos?
Just seeing that 411 is so funny because no one else is even close to that.
No.
So if you recall, I'm sure you do, I dropped him on the two teams I had him last week. I got him back in one. We'll go over that eventually. But so let's see. Well, at least with Ramos, so my concern dropping him going into last week's Fab was playing time. I thought he might get the short end of the stick with Yastrzemski back. That wasn't the case. Matos got sent down, surprisingly, I guess, for me. You probably not because you watch them all the time. But just from the position standpoint, I thought Ramos or Matos would be the center fielder. But Ramos has even played center field lately too, so I don't know how he's doing there, but it's definitely good for his playing time going forward. The big thing though with Ramos last week, this past week where I missed three home runs, was he had only had four strikeouts and 21 at bats. And week before that, when I did drop him, he had 12 Ks and 22 at bats. So I was seeing that high strikeout rate. And when you look at his Statcast page, Ramos has red everywhere except for his whiff rate and K rate. They are, he's not qualified for a percentile, but his K rate is almost 30% in the year. So, I mean, but his XBA is 270, but that comes along with him hitting the ball so hard where everything else is so red. And he has good speed, 75th percentile. And I think he's already stolen a handful of bases. Well, he only has one so far, but hopefully I can see that increasing. So I like Ramos. Like you said, a solid, outfielder three or four. He's definitely deserving of being added the way hitting is right now, but that's just, that max bid is too much. I'm sure the distribution is a little more in line than that, just that one bid shows. But yeah, I think definitely a good ad for right now.
Yeah, that's pretty bonkers stuff right there. I wish I could, there's probably a way to do it. I'm just not smart enough on the fly to do it. But yeah, the 411 was not the max, the one of the three in my leagues, but that's still insane. Max Meyer, this shows you that there are still some very savvy people playing out there. Because there is the rumblings that he might be coming back here pretty soon. I have not seen a set in stone answer from the Marlins. I could have missed that, but we've all heard the rumor, it seems like, because he was added in 146 leagues. I was very interested in him. I don't think I got him anywhere. I'll have to double check, but he went 146 leagues as high as $81, as low as $1. So that was not any of my leagues because I was about 12 to 15 everywhere, hoping to get some Max Meyer. He made three starts with the Marlins earlier in the year, 17 innings, four earned, 14 Ks, which was great. Got the baloney. I got to go rest in the minors for the Marlins situation. And it's been a roller coaster, actually. Strikeouts have been great, but he's got a 6.75 ERA. So what's your thoughts on the Max Meyer? I thought it was, with the pitching landscape, a solid add, all things considered. I was just shocked that I didn't get him anywhere. It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it does stink, but I mean, with the, like you mentioned, the workload, who knows how he's going to pitch when he gets called back up. And I was able to get Meyer last week for $4, so I was very happy with that.
Smart
in a league.
Man.
I have wrote a wire to thank for that one because I looked at it a couple weeks and who got me to add Meyer? I think you remember is Rodery.
Rodery.
I was looking to see if he was going to play. Then I saw Max Meyer's name. I go, okay, well, maybe I'll add Max instead for that upside. Yeah, it's weird. So Meyer didn't have a walk issue in the majors when he first got called up, but he's a 1.65 whip in the minors this year, and he has 12 walks and 26 innings pitched. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe they're working on something, but I mean, he was so successful when he was up earlier that you would think that nothing had to get changed unless they saw something mechanically that could get him hurt. Also, because he did come back from injury. But the note on Meyer and NFBC says he's expected back in the majors soon. And I think we have a question about this, but RotoWire has him projected to start at the Nationals, a great matchup on the weekend, this Saturday. It's not confirmed yet. He would be, I think, the probably the Weathers replacement because they're down Weathers and Cabrera. So Rodery Muñoz and Meyer theoretically would be the replacements for those two guys. But yeah, I mean, he's only been pitching like three or four innings. Meyer has in his games in the minors, so they're staying true to their word. If he were to come back now, though, it'd be a little bit earlier than they were saying. I think the expectation, at least for myself when I dropped him, was that it'd be after the All-Star break. But I mean, if he comes back now, I'll be happy with that, especially since I got him in the one main event for $4. And right now he's on my bench. I'm not gonna. Luckily, we have until tomorrow to make a decision. Hopefully, the Marlins say if he's gonna start tomorrow or not. But for now, I'm going to sit him and just hope he gets the call.
That's a good point for anybody listening that is in a league that you can start people until the Marlins actually play. Hopefully they announce something so you can stick Meyer in there, because that's what I was going to ask you. It's tough to start him right now and not knowing for sure if it is Saturday. Like, it should be Saturday, but we've seen that with these teams these days. Should be and are two different things. So to kind of wait and see how that one plays out. The next player here, I was a big fan of. I don't think I got much of him either, but Jake Irvin. Added in 117 leagues. He actually wasn't available in most of mine. As high as 65, as low as a dollar. Jake Irvin's been pretty darn solid. His month of May was outstanding. And if you go back to like April 29th, he's allowed two earned runs or less in all but one start. He has a 3.12 ERA on the season. He's shut down the Braves 12 innings, no runs, 14 Ks in the last two times you've seen him. Dude's been really good. He threw 143 innings last year, so innings should not be a concern this year. It might be his best stretch of baseball, but at the same time, it's a darn good stretch. And the Nats as a whole have been kind of a weird pitching factory this year. Like, not flashy, but good enough outside of Patrick Corbin, of course. But Jake Irvin, I thought, was a really strong pitch-up this week, because it's one of those that I like, because it's not just for this week. It's for the long term, it feels like.
For sure. And this is one, my evergreen comment on the show, is that I'm surprised he was available in so many leagues after, because he's been gone in the main event for so long, it feels like. I think he was added probably in April, at least as a streamer, and then people probably just held on to him. But the big thing I think that helps this being to be sustainable is his walk rate. So he has a year-to-date 4.7% walk rate, and that's awesome. The K rate isn't at like ideal. It's only 20%, but when you're walking so few batters, it's going to help you out and be successful. So his swinging strike rate is only 9.9% on the year, definitely below league average. But in the environment, the way the things are with hitting, he's able to succeed, and the indicators are good. But like I kind of mentioned last week, I don't think they're so reliable this year, at least compared to last year. I'm talking about like xFIP, ERA and FIP, or xERA and FIP. But even though the Braves are kind of weak, or they're not their full strength, it's cool to see them dominate them like that, especially like a division rival two times in a row. It's pretty rare to see that, especially for a team that good. But I was forced to play Irvin in my DC where I have him. I was hesitant because I wasn't really buying into what we were seeing, but now it seems like he's legit. The K rates, like I said, it's still low, so there could be some blowups with some hot weather. But for now, you kind of have to keep him in your lineups.
100%. I like that move quite a bit. Another one that you'll be surprised was available is David Hamilton, picked up in 78 leagues, as high as 73, as low as a dollar. Many people went and got him last week. The ones that didn't got him this week is what it came down to in OCs, and they realized, oops, he's still out there, and he's playing every day at shortstop for the Red Sox, and he's played really well this past week, hitting four of his last five, including his first home run of the year. He has 8 stolen bases over the last 2.5 weeks, hitting .346. I've always liked Hamilton because I think I don't think he's .346, but I think he's a good batting average asset with tons of speed, which will add to runs in that offense. Power will be limited, I think, but I think he's a strong middle infield option. And where I needed him, I went for him last week. So if I didn't get him last week, I didn't really go after him this week. So what's your thoughts on David Hamilton?
No, he's been great. I got him in the main event. I played him last week, so I was very happy with how he performed. Still, the only couple of chinks in the armor are the platooning and low in the lineup. I mean, other than that, though, you can't really complain with the production that he's been providing. And I think even the Gills was saying, I think he tweeted last night, how is he still available? I think he bid $37 with only like a $3 runner-up on Hamilton. Yeah. And you kind of feel bad that he wasted that money, but Hamilton should be definitely rostered the way with shortstop is right now. I think it's hard to find a good replacement shortstop if you need one.
100% agree with you on that one. It's pretty good option this time of year. I don't see too many of those hanging around there. Now let's get some Italian on the screen here. Spencer Arrighetti, the spaghetti himself. He had a two-step this week. He's facing the Giants right now as we speak. That's always a nice start to your week. But Arrighetti was added in 78 leagues, as high as 31, as low as a dollar. It was a rough go for Arrighetti when he first got called up, but been getting it going of late. 3 earned runs or less in 4 of his last 5. He's allowed 1 run in his last 2. 30 strikeouts over 25 and a third innings pitched. So he's starting to show some of the stuff people saw in the minor leagues with him. Were you in on Arrighetti? Were available these days?
I don't have him anywhere. I think he was held on to in the main events through most of the struggles. So looking at his game log, because I haven't really looked into Arrighetti too much this year, a lot of walks for my liking. at least two in every start. It's been two or three in every start this year. It's kind of wild to see that consistency. The numbers are still bad, are pretty ugly year to date. His decent K rate, 55 Ks in 46 innings on the season. So that's nice. It's probably, people will probably see that in the Astros and they're like, okay, well, I want to take the chance on him. But I could see some more blowups going forward as long as he keeps that elevated walk rate. Especially as you get into a deeper league, like you kind of have to take some risks. And I can see the upside with Arrigetti, but just be mindful of the walk rate, I think. And if it becomes a problem, I mean, like his rotation spot seems fine because everyone keeps getting Tommy John on the Astros, apparently. But
seems to be a thing.
Yeah, it's a trend. Like them and the Dodgers, they get all these good pitchers and they'll break down on them. I'd just be cautious with Arrigetti. I don't think he's by any means like a guaranteed win. It's just be careful like with that walk rate.
Yep, for sure. Gavin Sheets was not a name I expected to see up here, but here we are. He's added in 78 leagues, as high as $23, as low as a buck. Sheets has been a guy that has been playing every day. People love him versus righties. Last week he hit since June 1st, he's hit 300 with three homers. White Sox have a lot of righties this week, so I guess that's where most of this comes from. I was just still surprised to see him added in 78 leagues in the OC. But what's your thoughts on Gavin Sheets?
Yeah, so he was one of the guys I had in the conditional where I was dropping Mullins at one point. And I think a lot of people were chasing the two-homer weeks. He had two homers week 10, two last week. So the one crossed into May. But, he's been batting fourth for the White Sox, Sheets has. And they just got Robert Jr. back. Sheets is hitting ahead of Vaughn. So a little protection. But, I feel like Sheets always goes on these stretches each year, multiple stretches where he has these power binges and then he's an ad and they get a bunch of right-hand starters coming up and he'll probably get dropped if not next week, like within 2 weeks probably, but definitely someone that's going to be on and off waiver wires all year.
100% agree with you on that one. David Peterson is the next one on the list. I like this one. Added in 74 leagues, as high as 22, as low as a buck. Those are reasonable bids in my opinion. Peterson's made two starts since coming off the IL. He's thrown 11 and two-thirds innings, allowed four total earned runs. Only 5 Ks, which is a bummer because we've seen him be a better strikeout guy in the past, but that could come still. He's missed the entire season on the IL, so we'll have to wait and see there. But I think this is when we're talking about potential again, let me phrase that, potential longer-term starters, Peterson kind of fits that mold. So this was an interesting move for me. What about you?
I think this is a stream move because he is lined up to face the Marlins on Wednesday.
That's a good stream.
Yeah, so I think he was very – heavily attacked. Well, that's a weird way to put it, but he was coveted in main events last week after the first start. And I think I said on the show that I completely oversaw him. I didn't even consider adding Peterson. I kind of missed that start. But the one thing that even if I was more cognizant of him being available was that he's always had a high walk rate. So it's been around 4 walks per 9 in his career. And before this year, he's had at least a 10% walk rate in every season. And that always kept him back in my mind. And now, like, he's kept the walks down so far in his two starts, but like you said, the Ks aren't there. I mean, he could just be trying to figure out, get into his groove since he's been gone, hurt for so long. But he's not someone I would just leave in my lineup. I would, like I mentioned with the Marlins matchup, definitely target that. Like, if he's facing the Angels or something or another really poor team like the White Sox or the A's, go ahead. But I wouldn't be – kind of like with Arrigetti, I'm not going to expect too much out of Peterson going forward.
To me, Peterson fits that bench streamer. Like he's you don't really want to drop him because as pitching gets weird as the season goes on, you'll end up using Peterson at least 2 weeks out of the month, probably. That's what it feels like. So he's one of those guys where I'd like to have there. I like the Kyle Gibsons. That's like the go-to poster boy for that role. I could see Peterson getting there because he will have those games where he strikes out 10. Like he just will. And he'll be like, whoa. And he will do that. So he's a guy you kind of want to just, if you can, keep him on your roster instead of like an Aaron Civale or a Brian Bello. That would be a guy to use there. This one surprised me as well. Simeon Woods Richardson picked up in 72 leagues, as high as 75, as low as a buck. I believe he has two starts this week, which helps with that conversation. He has only allowed 7 runs over his last 5 starts in 25 and two-thirds. He's also struck out 19, but he's allowed 19 hits and 5 walks. So that's not like perfect. Still less than a one whip, which is good. But what's your thoughts on Woods Richardson? Because I was a big fan early. I have not been starting him much lately. He just doesn't – he's kind of a blank box score when it comes to fantasy, and it's just it's rough out there in the streets when pitching has actually been pretty good of late.
He was actually available in one of my main events, and I was – so, you know, like the unicorn bid is the term where you match up with the runner-up and you win. But it's actually a bad thing, because that means you're behind the person in the standing. So I was the other end where I had the matching bid, but I lost out because I was ahead of the person in the standing. So I guess I don't know. We'll let someone else figure out that term. But I looked at the stats with Richardson, and so if you look at him year to date, he has a 2.84 ERA and a 1.09 WHIP, which are phenomenal numbers. 50 innings pitched, 42 Ks. But I see what you're talking about. So if you look at the game log, though, we got 3.2 innings pitch, 6, 4.1, 5.1, 4.2, 5, 4.1. So he's not going deep into games. And I think I could see that's where the frustration is, especially on from where you're coming from, and why he was probably dropped in the main event, because he didn't really have a poor start. On the 8th, he had 6 Ks and 6 in the 3rd innings. Didn't get the win, unfortunately. And that's been the issue, too. He only has 2 wins because he doesn't go very deep into his starts. But I remember when he was first called up, I was worried about the K rate. What was that?
I was all about him when he got called up.
I think I tried getting him, but I wasn't too aggressive. But his year-to-date numbers have been good in terms of like the walks and the Ks. So, I mean, if he can get stretched out and go 5 every game, I he should be rostered and started most times. It's just that up until this point, he hasn't really shown that he can go deep in the games consistently. But I was surprised he's available in so many OCs. But I think he's someone to hold on to, and I'd rather have him than Peterson, I think. I think the underlying numbers for Woods Richardson are better than Peterson's. But I don't know. It's like I said, with the lack of the stamina going into deep into games, it's kind of tough, especially when wins are so valuable right now.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. He's like right on the brink of maybe being really good, but it's just not clicking for me. But I do see where you're coming from on that one. This is a fun one because Andrew Vaughn was written off a while ago, but he was re-added in 65 leagues this week, as high as 58, as low as a buck. I know I was in on him. I don't think I ended up getting him anywhere. But he's on a 9-game hitting streak right now, Ben, where he's hitting .333 with 2 homers, like 24% K rate. His StatCast numbers, 7.4% barrel, 41% hard hit. So he seems like he might be slowly warming up here at the plate. You mentioned Lubob's back. Sheets had a big week. Maybe Paul DeJong's leading the team in home runs. He almost hit .300 with 3 homers last week. The White Sox had a good week, but also Vaughn's hitting well. So what was your thoughts on Andrew Vaughn? Are we believing what we're seeing?
I think – so this is what I was hoping for when I drafted Vaughn, because he was one of those guys I liked waiting on first base for. And it looked pretty poor to start the season. But I held on in my one-man event. I'm happy with that. I also lost Ty France in that one. So having both those guys start out slow was kind of rough. But I think in the DC, at least, and even in that main event, I was sitting Vaughn, but I didn't want to drop him just because of how first base is in corner, especially in 15s. But, yeah, this is kind of what you're paying for. He's that – I remember we talked about him doing a projection review and how on the nose he was to the projections last year. He's just like the same guy every year and boring, better in 15s, of course. But maybe he's kind of – getting that hot streak to get his numbers back to where they are. And I can see why you'd add that in a 12-team league. He had 7 runs last week, which is great. He's getting full-time play. He's going to be in there most days. Like, he had a break when he was struggling bad. I remember him sitting a couple of games. But Vaughn's going to be in there most of the time now, especially if – and, like, with Robert back, it's only going to help him out more. And if Eloy comes back, I don't know about this week, but next week, that's going to help too. So I like Vaughn. Even in, like, an OC, it's – you were saying before, it's tough there for corner. So I would definitely be in on adding Vaughn.
Yep. If I had Rizzo, I was trying to get Vaughn big time. I was trying to make that move. We'll go back and check if I did or not. We'll find out. I wanted to flip it to, I mentioned how Vlad had that tweet about in main events, one random player available. You'd be surprised. And we'll get to your crochet talk here in a bit. But in OCs, Christopher Sanchez was picked up in one league. As high as 217, so that's a good one. Christian Walker, some reason, was dropped. He was as high as 206. Pete Fairbanks, 156. Brent Rooker went for 155. That was interesting. Tyler O'Neill went for 137. Someone picked up Bo Naylor for $77. You might not be happy about that one. But any other thoughts on the fab this week, like your other high bids? Snell was picked up in 8 leagues. Ramos was 411. They both tied. Edwin Diaz went as high as 313, as low as 117 in 3 leagues. Randy Rosarena, 251 and 159 in 3 leagues. Josh Lowe is still out there. For some reason, he's not playing. Let me ask you this one. Cade Povich was added in 49 leagues, as high as 219, as low as a buck. He might only have one more start, Ben, so I was not overly in on him.
No, I think I had him written down as a name of someone to be mindful of, but I didn't put a bid in for him. I don't trust him to stick in the Orioles rotation at all. And he wasn't even that he had more walks than strikeouts in this first game, so not a good sign for what he could do going forward right now. So talking about the Christian Walker ad, so I saw someone talk about that. I think it may have been Phil and a couple other people were in the thread, and they were thinking that the person who dropped Walker meant to drop Taiwan Walker.
That would make more sense.
Yeah, so that stings. That's unfortunate. It's funny seeing Luis Matos getting added when he was getting dropped in the main event this week. A lot of money too. Ooh. And
It just goes Severino's to show you.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say it goes to show you to check. It's like Tristan Casas is start. Like, he expects to be back by like July 1. So he got picked up in 22 more leagues this week. So that's one. Wilson Contreras got picked up in 62 leagues. Josh Young in 35. As they're all getting closer to returning, at least. That's a plus.
Yeah, for sure. Gavin Williams is another one, 36 leagues.
Yep.
Yoshida's coming back, but he's not. He's more of a 15 play, I think. There's not enough upside, I think, for a 12.
Yep. Max Scherzer picked up in 6. He should have one more rehab start and be back. Christian Scott picked up in 10 leagues. I think he comes back this week, so that's a fun one. Shane Boz in 44. So, yeah, Jake Berger picked up in 9. Anything else you'd like to discuss here before we talk about our ads of the week?
Nope. I think we did a pretty good job covering all the OC stuff.
All the main ones, yep. Let's do it. Let's talk about the FAB results from the week. So, Ben, I'll give you the floor to talk about your 15s.
Okay, let me try to get to the page. It's saying I'm getting an error saying FAB is currently processing.
It's okay. I'll do mine real quick.
You go first. Looking.
So my 15s, my online championship, I did not get Wilson Contreras. He went for 107. I did not get Max Meyer. He went for 54. What I did get is I got Kevin Pillar, dropped Brandon Marsh 9-2. Pillar is still doing his thing, sitting a bit versus righties, but he's still playing well. I got Ryan Stanek, dropped Albert Alzolay 7-2 just because I needed a pitcher. I hated the starting pitchers. I know Andres Munoz came back. He threw the 8th inning on Sunday, so Stanek will probably still get some moments there. Then I added Cody Petit, dropped Trevor Williams 4 with a runner-up of 1. I plan on dropping Petit after this week when Garrett Cole returns. Bub in the Bloom, Listener League 1 that I'm in. I got Andrew Vaughn, dropped Justin Turner. Hey, there we go. 28-9 in that one, so $9 runner-up. That stings. Auction 2 didn't do anything. That's fun. All my bids lost. Max Meyer went for 63 in that one. And then my main event qualifier, I wanted Brian De La Cruz. He went for 94. I had him at 57, so that stung. But I got Captain Jack Sawinski, dropped Mike Tauchman 11-0. Big, big week coming up here for Jack with all the righties on deck that the Pittsburgh Pirates face. But that was my only move in my 15. So, like I said, pretty light week overall. I'll get to my 12s in a minute. But are you ready with your 15s?
Yep, it loaded. So, I should have been more aggressive on Jack, but because they do have the Colorado series, it's just – the average is so scary right now with the way average. Rough. Yeah, but I like the upside of that ad. All right, so main one, this is where I got Elliot Ramos back. I dropped Sal Frelick. So I probably should have dropped Frelick for Pete Crow Armstrong last week because they're basically the same player. But I figured Frelick's been okay. This team needs a jolt, so go with Ramos. 54, I think I was the lowest main event win on Ramos for this one. 54, run up of 51. So that was nice, even though I could have saved $54 by not dropping him, but oh well. Then I added Nolan Schoenwell. I dropped Miguel Sano, 22, only a backup of 1, which I was surprised at considering how first base is and how Nolan's playing all the time. I also added Cody Petit in this main event. I dropped Johnny Brito, $12, $7 backup. So main event 2. This is the Mullins one. So I played it safe here. I only added AJ Puck. I dropped Mark Leiter Jr. This is also where I have Hector Neris, $8, no backup. So I dropped it from 12 because of the blow up outing, and I could have gone for $1. I guess no one really wanted Puck. After hearing about the Tanner Scott's going to get traded, I'm like, well, Puck's probably going to be the first guy to get save chances when that happens. So, I mean, if Scott goes to the Cubs, hopefully I'm set, but hopefully it doesn't happen. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Yeah. So that was my only add, $8. So I was good. I was able to save money there. Main event three. This one was very cheap as well. I was low on money. This is the Scott League. I added Randy Vasquez for a start against the A's. I dropped Johnny Brito, $4, no backup. I added Trevor Rogers just as like a wait and see. I dropped DL Hall. He got put on the 68-day IL. Hall did $4, no backup. And then I switched out Jose Trevino for Miguel Amaya, $1, no backup. And then in my OLAC, I again added Cody Poteet, dropped Cooper Criswell, 18, backup of 6. And then I added Ezekiel Duran, $8, backup of 4. I dropped Miguel Sano there. And that was it. Yeah, so pretty cheap for me for the most part, except for that Ramos bid.
Yeah, a lot of add now, drop later guys potentially to keep the train moving. So I feel you there. All right, my three OCs, my first OC of one move, and this is a people might scoff at, but Kirilloff quieted down again. Give me Wilmer Flores, added Kirilloff 3-0. So again, not much there. This league, Elliot Ramos went for 113. So there, we're going to continue a trend here, folks. OC two, Christian Scott went for 100 in this one. Gleyber Torres for 74. Elliot Ramos went for 45 in this one. I got Michael Conforto, dropped Cooper Criswell 5-0. Again, not much going on in those streets. And then OC three, I got Elliot Ramos for $9, runner up of 3, dropped Ben Brown, which we'll see if I regret that or not. And then I added Mark Vientos because I need corner infield help, dropped Tommy Pham 9-0. No runner up on Vientos. Like the Vientos, no love, really worries me at times. I know Beatty played on Sunday, but they're going to put Beatty back in the AAA because he's this there as an extra player. They're going to put him at second base at AAA, they already said, to bring him up and basically tell McNeil to go pound sand pretty soon. So I like Vientos quite a bit, but maybe I'm overthinking that one. But I need quarter infield help, and Vientos definitely provides that in that kind of format. But as you can tell by all that conversation, I still have Anthony Rizzo everywhere. So look, lucky me, lucky me. What happened in your Yahoo leagues?
I was going to say for Vientos, like you were definitely in the right because he's hit 286 or higher in all 4 weeks since he's been back. So
yeah, he's been a stud. Like I've had him, I think I already had him in most of like majority of the leagues where I needed the corner infield help, and that was the new one. So I grabbed him again. I'm like, what are we doing here, people? I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, he has 4 homers over that stretch, 1 per week. That's awesome. I wish I had him in my main events. At least I have a couple that could use third base help. So nice ad for sure. All right, yeah. So this is my Yahoo daily league. Last week or across the last week, I added Ryan Stanek. I dropped Joe Adell. Got a save out of Stanek. I don't think it mattered though, my matchup. I dropped Robert Gasser from this league. And this is a rarity for Bench with Bubba. I did a trade. So I traded Bailey Ober for Dansby Swanson.
Are you on the getting Dansby side?
Yeah, I got Dansby back.
Nice move.
Thank you. Yeah. So I have a lot of those like mid, like post, like round or pick 100 to like 250 pitchers like Lodolo, Bryce Miller, a lot of those. Like Obers is like another one of those. And I needed some help with offense lately and figured to buy low on Swanson. And he did pretty well last week. So I was happy with the trade so far. Then I ended up dropping Connor Norby for Trevor Larnach for a stream. I think I still have Larnach because I think the Twins played tonight, but I'll probably switch him out eventually this week. And this morning I added David Hamilton. I dropped Luis Garcia Jr. I thought there was more upside with Hamilton right now than Garcia Jr. So see how that one works out.
I like all those moves. Larnach, I know, at least scored a run, if not more tonight. They got a bunch of, I think it's 5 righties out of 7 games this week. Yeah. I've always been a pro Larnach guy anyways, but the Ober thing, I wrote about him in daily matchups over the weekend, and I didn't really know I haven't paid that close attention. He's almost gone to my Gene Segura of the world. It's been a rough go of late for Bailey Ober. Like, we're starting to see the fly ball issues turn into home run issues, and not to mention other issues with him, not striking out as many guys and walks and whatnot. So I like that Swanson's seemed like he's heating up a little bit. So that could be a fun one for sure. All right, we got a couple listener questions here. One from the chat that I saved from earlier. Mike from Virginia, or I always say Mike from Virginia. It's Mike Virginia.
Could be from Virginia. You never know.
He could be. He says, are we trusting Thorpe on tomorrow? Drew Thorpe, one of the top pitching prospects for the Chicago White Sox, came over in the Dylan Cease trade from the Padres. He's going to make his MLB debut on Tuesday at AA, the 1.35 ERA over 11 starts with 56 Ks and 60 innings pitched. I've heard some people been rave about Drew Thorpe, and others go, well, he's got a mediocre fastball and a heavy changeup, and that doesn't really pan out in the big league level. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I'm excited. I have him in a ton of DCs. He's like one of my late rounders, like dart plays. But what are your thoughts when you see a guy like Drew Thorpe?
Well, former Yankee as well. He was in the Soto trade. He actually has a two-start week. So Thorpe gets the Mariners tomorrow, and then he's projected for the D-backs on Sunday. But you never know with those Sunday starts. Also depends on how he does on Tuesday, I suppose. But yeah, look at those minor league numbers are awesome for Thorpe. I don't know how the Mariners are doing. They were striking out so much to start the year. I'm not sure if they're still like that right now. I don't have it pulled up, but
they're striking out a lot.
Yeah, so I mean, I would take the flyer. Like, they lost France. They have a lot of guys who are just okay in the lineup. And Thorpe's a pretty big prospect. So I'd be okay with starting him, I think. It's definitely some risk, but I mean, I don't know. Depends on how much risk you want to take, I guess.
Yeah, I plugged him into all of my DCs where I have him, especially for the two-start factor, but just the Mariners alone. Like, yes, there's always risk. There's always the adrenaline starts. You see kind of messes take place out there, but I do like what we should see from him. Let's put it that way. A couple other questions here. Stephen Goodwin asked, does Mike Meyer start Saturday 6-15 like RotoWire says? Well, we think so, right, Ben? We hope so. That's what we're thinking.
Yes, and I think he meant Max Meyer.
Sorry, Max Meyer. He also says, does Bobby Miller start later this week? The expectations from looking at news consistently is Bobby Miller was supposed to have made his last start at Rancho Cucamonga or at AAA this past week, but the Dodgers have still not said for sure yet. So I would just, if he starts, let it slide and wait till next time around, is my opinion.
Yeah, so RotoWire doesn't even have Miller in for this week. That's not a good sign. If anything, they're a little more optimistic. And then, so...
Yeah, they have him in for next week at Colorado.
Welcome back to the bigs. Yeah. I mean, he's much better than the Rockies in Colorado, though, so I could see him doing all right in that start. Because he last pitched on the 7th, 4 innings. I don't know. That kind of lines up with... the 15th, potentially. I wouldn't risk playing Miller. I would just wait and see.
Yep, I would wait and see for sure. Base hit, Elliot Ramos, by the way, folks. Congratulations. And then Timothy, who's an avid listener and plays in the Bub and the Bloom League, says, hey, guys, do you have a short list of multi-tool hitting prospects that are worth saving his fab on? I have one OC team who needs a difference-making bat. Ben made a good list, a really good list. So the floor is yours, Ben, because – there's a couple I've actually mentioned in recent weeks on that list, and you can highlight them now.
Yeah, so I kind of – well, I don't know if this is cheating, but I went to the MLB.com top 100 prospects list just to get a sense of who they have at the top. Pretty good list. And the one that – you haven't really heard a lot about him. I think he may have gotten hurt, but I think the number one stash besides the other two I'll mention at the end is James Wood of the Nationals. He was crushing it to start the year. People thought he should have made the team. I think he had a really good spring training. I'm not sure how the Nationals are in the standings, but their outfield's kind of fluid. They have guys like Winker and Rosario playing all the time, and they got Lane Thomas. But if someone gets traded or hurt, I think James Wood could get called up. Maybe even someone moves to DH because Meneses isn't really doing anything. He's old and doesn't really have a future with the team. I also put down Jordan Lawler. He's like a 20-40 in the minors type bat for the Diamondbacks, the shortstop. I was talking about how Hamilton was a pretty big ad because of how bad shortstop is on the waiver wire. I could see him like Blaze Alexander. He's been okay lately, but I don't think the D-backs like his defense. And so Lawler, once he's healthy, I think, and has a lot of games under his belt, could be up relatively soon. Another shortstop, Colson Montgomery of the White Sox. He's their top prospect. Paul DeJong can only do this for so long, I think. And he'll probably get traded if he continues.
He's gonna get traded. That's what they're waiting for. Just keep hitting home runs so the value gets a little higher.
Yeah, and actually the theme here is shortstops and outfielders. I just realized. That's Montgomery. My next one is Marcelo Mayer of the Red Sox. Yeah. He was an afterthought for me in DCs because of Story, but then Story got hurt, and now they've had a hard time filling their infield spots. Like with Rafaela being not the best. Now they have Hamilton there, but depending on what happens with their fill-ins, I could see Meyer getting the call. And then the two obvious ones are Noelvi Marte and Jason Dominguez. For Noelvi, he's going to be back, so everyone's going to have eyes on him. He's going to be expensive. And Dominguez is dependent upon the health of the Yankees. But, I mean, I think Jason Dominguez has the biggest impact of everyone I've named. It's just that everyone's going to be in on him, and you have to wait for an injury. I think what I mean, I probably have him ranked Dominguez, Marte, Wood, Lawler, probably.
I'd probably switch Lawler Wood for me, but I get it. I get it. If you, the power, I expect at least.
I like the power a little bit more, I think, than the than the speed. But I don't know. Who knows? Yeah, if they'll get called up or not. But
yeah, with Lawler, the D-backs already flat out said the second he's ready, he's coming up. Like they want him back immediately, and I've kind of hinted at it because Geraldo Perdomo is supposed to be back here any day now too. So Blaze and Eugenio could be out of the way pretty quick. Like Eugenio isn't doing much either, so we'll have to see how that one plays out. But they could be getting Jordan Lawler and Geraldo Perdomo back, which would be some nice reinforcements for the defending National League champions to try to make a run.
Would Lawler go to third base in that scenario then?
Yep, yep. That's the plan. Like at first when they signed Eugenio, I'm like, oh, that means Lawler's going to the minors, and I got a bunch of feedback from the Diamondbacks fans. You're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. Then that's pretty much what happened. Then he broke his thumb like the first game, and he's been out for 2 months. But I think they've seen enough from Eugenio where they're like, okay, screw it. Like, let's see what the kid's got type situation. That's because otherwise it's Marte at second. It's they love Perdomo's defense. That's just the reality of the world. And it makes sense for the pitchers they have. You need that defense. So Lawler should be the third baseman. That's what it looks like. Don't quote me. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and he had decent enough power in the minors where he hit 20 homers roughly, so he could survive at third base offensively, I think.
Yep, for sure. Well, all right, my friend, we will wrap it up there. Another successful Fab recap and other discussions on baseball players. Before we head out of here, remind everybody what you got going on at Sports Ethos and where they can find you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks again for having me on, Bubba. It's always fun. I'm doing my weekly streamer pitcher article, mainly tailored to the NFBC, low rostered players for how they've been, whether if they have good matchups for the upcoming week or if they've kind of been pitching relatively well or prospects getting called up. Might get a lot of prospects going forward. I have a list on my phone of all these guys that we'll talk about next week, probably who got called are going to be making their debuts this week. But yeah, so you can tweet out every Sunday morning, and you find me on Twitter at @BreakingBend_T, and whenever I'm on the pod with Bubba.
Yep, it seems to be almost a weekly occurrence now. So we'll see where this keeps going. And we have fun doing it. So I always enjoy sending the text out on a Sunday or a Monday morning and asking what Ben's up to. So I think he's almost expecting it at this point. But again, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBend_T as we're over there at Sports Ethos. I'm on Twitter at @BDentric. And once again, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 674. Catch you all next time.